Yes, but we should not copy their impulses. Discarnates and incarnates who still misuse the possibilities of an exchange between the visible and invisible spheres for the ordinary person will pay a high price for their carelessness. In that case, I ask respectfully, how are we to respond to requests for guidance? On rare occasions we can provide verbal assistance in answer to certain requests if they merit it and if the request happens to have a bearing on spiritual matters, and if we can do so, nevertheless, it is almost always essential to answer nothing directly but help them silently. This is simply because we don't have a lot of time to remind our incarnate brothers and sisters of certain duties that, for the sake of their own happiness, they should never fail to recall. Our kindly instructor was quiet for a few moments and then, wishing to clear up any doubts, he continued, "There are a lot of discarnate spirits who enjoy giving uninformed advice about various earthly situations and problems, but these poor friends get bogged down in secondary issues and are incapable of a higher vision regarding the infinite horizons of the eternal life. They make themselves into mere slaves of the lower mentalities incarnated on the earth. They forget that our immediate interest right now must be, above all others, whatever relates to higher spirituality. Our disturbed brothers and sisters who offer uninformed advice to lazy incarnate minds about matters regarding humankind's just and necessary responsibilities must do so at their own expense. What happens to them?" asked Vicente. Our mentor, however, replied with another question, "What happens to responsible people when they decide to spend time on pointless activities?" At that moment, one of the spirit clinicians approached and was amiably greeted by Aniceto, who said to him after introducing us, "Feel free to use our humble services. We're here as itinerant doctors, ready for active duty." "Are you here from Nosola?" asked our new friend. "Yes, we are." "Oh good. If possible, after the meeting I would like your help with two urgent cases. One is a young woman who discarnated today and the other is a dying man, my friend." "But of course," Aniceta replied solicitously, "we'll await your instructions." Hard at work, again. Bent's interpretation of the gospel was given under the inspiration of an emissary of honorable position present at the gathering, and was received with overall respect among the discarnate spirits. There was not a similar display of harmony within the group of incarnates, however. A considerable instability of thought could be detected, and the anxious expectations of those present disturbed the vibrational current. Every now and then, we were caught unawares by certain imbalances, which particularly affected the mediumistic abilities of Doña Isabel and the receptive attitude of the commentator, who seemed to lose his train of thought, as is commonly said. Co-workers acted to re-establish the rhythm as far as possible. We noticed, though, that a few of the incarnate brothers and sisters remained extremely restless, especially the ones newest to the doctrinal knowledge. They lacked discipline and allowed their minds to wander very far from the uplifting commentaries. Their mental pictures could be seen very clearly. Some of them were entangled in domestic matters, whereas others were impatient because they had not immediately achieved the goals that had brought them here. Aniceto, who never missed the opportunity to explain something new, discreetly commented, "Many disciples of Spiritism are concerned about the issue of concentration during work of a spiritual nature. There are many who try to set the standard regarding the outward appearance of the person who is concentrating. They require a certain body posture, and expect to see immediate results in activities of this sort. Nevertheless, those who say they are concentrating are of course referring literally to the act of gathering something together. Well, if these incarnate friends don't take their responsibilities seriously outside the room of spiritist practice, if they are perhaps cultivators of frivolity, indifference, deliberate and incessant error and stubbornness, and if they disregard the advice about perfection they give to others, what can they possibly gather together during a few fleeting moments of spiritual endeavor? Good concentration requires a righteous life, so that our thoughts can be gathered together in order to provide us with the ability for a noble union with the good. Preparatory work involving mental meditative activities of a higher order is essential. an inner attitude of laxity toward the gospel lessons they receive cannot instill believers or co-workers with a concentration of spiritual energies for spiritually constructive work just because they devote themselves for only a few minutes during the week to the thoughts of Christian love required of them. As you can see, this is a complex subject and demands at length reflection and instruction. I began to pay more attention to the incarnate participants. If it were not for the devotion of co-workers on our plane, any tangible progress would have been impossible. 288. Isadora and other devoted friends were hard at work, awakening some of the drowsy ones and readjusting the thoughts of the inattentive ones in order to neutralize certain harmful influences. I realized that the immediate benefits of what Benz was teaching were much more evident among the discarnates. In that group, there was not a single one who didn't garner direct consolation and sublime comfort. Just as Benz finished his commentary, and before Doña Isabel went to devote herself to the residuaria work, a discarnate woman approached Isadora and asked him emotionally, "My brother, could you ask our guides if it might be possible for me to communicate directly with my daughter? She's here at the meeting. I'm sure that, with due permission, our Isabel would heed my maternal anguish." Isadora showed a sincere desire to be helpful, but after exchanging a few words with a higher level instructor who was standing between the medium and Benz, he answered her somewhat uncomfortably. His answer came as a great surprise to me. "My sister," he said, "our esteemed Anselmo does not consider your request possible. He has informed me that your daughter is still not in any condition to receive such a blessing. For the time being, she needs to display what she learned from your example while you were incarnate, and she also needs to remain in the arena of opportunity without having to rely on you so heavily." The woman was downcast, so Isadora continued in a fraternal tone, "But that's not the only reason Anselmo felt he had to turn you down. Such a measure would cause your maternal sentiments serious trouble. Taking old acquired habits into consideration, your daughter, in her current evolutionary state, would depend too much on your aid. She would become too attached to her loving and sensitive mom, and you might find yourself disturbed in your new career as a spirit. She needs to be free to display what she learned from your example, whereas your heart must remain free because of the worthy merit you achieved at the cost of your sweat and tears while on earth. Therefore, considering the sacred character of maternal love, our guides cannot grant your daughter the right to disturb you. Do you understand? Don't let this temporary impossibility upset you. Remember that we are all children of God. The Lord will provide means to help your daughter on your behalf. As for the rest, let us rejoice in our work. Keep in mind that although you will not be able to help her directly, we can resort to an indirect method. Who knows? Perhaps tomorrow you will be able to meet with your daughter in a dream." The woman smiled, comforted, and replied, "That's true. I must come to grips with my new situation here." At that moment, another spirit approached Isadora with a request, "My friend, I would appreciate your help with the physicians so they can provide additional recommendations for my nephew Amaro. He needs relief for his physical health." Isadora displayed a meaningful expression and responded, "I cannot, my friend, I cannot. If Amaro himself were to ask and if the physicians were to agree, everything will be just fine. However, you know that our patient is very rebellious. I have already arranged to provide him with medical guidance from our plane 5 times, but he has never acknowledged our efforts. He is unwilling to buy the recommended medications himself. But whenever his friends do it for him, he disregards the dosing schedules and thinks he is above the method. He caustically criticizes the recommendations he receives and then makes use of them with disdain. Of course, I'm not annoyed by this, just as an adult would not be irritated by the games of a child. But you need to understand that we are dealing with a very sacred matter and there is no time to waste on those who enjoy playing games. Furthermore, giving to those who do not want to receive would not be charitable." Isadora spoke with an inflection of fraternal goodness, which smoothed over any sense of harsh frankness. "I understood that to assist so many people and wend one's way through so many different matters, It would not be possible to treat them in any other way. The work continued with great educational value for Vicente and me. The efforts of the spirit clinicians, along with the selflessness of the special intermediary, touched my heart. In fact, it took a great deal of selflessness to attend to the massive and considerable work in the area of assistance to the incarnates, that because few of the attendees seemed to maintain a corresponding attitude of sublime fraternal dedication in the name of the Master. However, reading my thoughts, Anicetu commented, "Someday, Andre, Jesus will help you understand that it is better to serve than to be served, more blessed to give than to receive." The dread of death. Anicetu's many explanations answered my natural questions. Nevertheless, there was still more to learn. Why were there so many discarnates here? Since they had already received spiritual assistance, couldn't they congregate on our plane in places that were just as spiritual? I respectfully asked him about this. "Actually, Andre," he responded, "most discarnates do receive invaluable instruction in our sphere of action. At the beginning of your new spirit experience, you yourself were not taken to our corporeal friend's environment for the guidance you needed. However, when they arrive here, a lot of individuals are possessed by an unhealthy longing for groups of their own kind. The same thing happens on other planes of evolution with animals when they feel a mortal longing for the herd. To help these discarnates adapt to their new habitat, the work of rescuing them is more effective when in close proximity to the magnetic energies of brothers and sisters who are still involved in the carnal circles. At times like these, this room serves as a large incubator of psychic energies for the work of acclimating certain spirit bodies to their new life." And nodding toward a large group of needy spirits, he continued, "The brothers and sisters in the situation I'm referring to hear our voices and are indeed consoled by our aid, but human warmth is filled with magnetism of more meaningful level for them. Upon contact with it, they experience the awakening of new energies. That is why our cooperative work in centers of this sort offers advantages that you, for now, could not imagine. Didn't you see the lazy, drowsy and careless incarnates who came to receive benefits in this house? They, themselves, gave something. They gave magnetic warmth, beneficial, vital emanations to this home sanctuary's benefactors who manipulate elements of this nature and distribute them in valuable fluid combinations to enfeebled and maladjusted spirits." And smiling, he concluded, "Everything has some value, Andre. Our Father has created nothing in vain. When the meeting had ended with all-round benefits that I won't describe in detail, Anicetu assisted a physician who wished to avail himself of his generous assistance to his patients. Very often," exclaimed this physician from Doña Isabel's group, as if offering information to Vicente and me, "we not only administer medicine to infirm bodies, but we also guide discarnates who, during the course of their illnesses, had been under our care." "Are there always a lot of them?" I asked. "The number is growing. There are occasions when we enjoyed the cooperation of the patient's spirit friends or relatives. But in most cases we are forced to act by ourselves. Fortunately, we almost never lack dedicated and active helpers. There are fellow spirits who are devoted to caring for tubercular, blind, lame, leprous, disturbed and dying individuals by themselves. They are our dedicated co-workers in all sorts of situations." We left the premises and in a few minutes we stopped in front of a large building. Our colleague led us inside a spacious morgue, where we were faced with an interesting scene. The body of a young woman less than 30 years old was laid out, icy cold and stiff, with a male spirit at her side, watching over her. I was astonished to see that the discarnate spirit was still attached to her remains. She seemed withdrawn into herself, harboring a strong feeling of fear. She shut her eyes deliberately, afraid of looking around her. "The process of her disengagement from her physiological ties has ended," exclaimed the attentive physician, "but for the last 6 hours the poor thing has been overcome by a terrible feeling of dread." And pointing to the spirit gentleman next to her, the physician explained, "That is her fiancé. He has been waiting for her for a long time. We moved a bit closer and heard him say lovingly, "Cremilda. Cremilda, let's go. Leave your tattered garment behind. I did everything possible so that you wouldn't suffer anymore. Our little house is waiting for you. It's filled with love and light." But the young woman closed her eyes as if she didn't want to see him. It was obvious that her spirit body was completely detached from its physical vessel, but the poor thing remained stretched out, imitating the position of her corpse, and overcome with extreme terror. Anaisato seemed to understand everything in the blink of an eye and made a subtle sign to the discarnate fellow, who, deeply troubled, approached him. "You must help her differently," Anaisato said resolutely. "I can see that the poor thing has not slept during her disengagement and seems frightened due to her lack of spiritual preparation. It's not a good idea for you to show yourself to her right now. In spite of the love you feel for her, she cannot see you again without becoming terribly upset at this moment in which her mind is floating about aimlessly." "Yes," he responded sadly. "I've been calling her for 6 hours non-stop, and I too have noticed her dread." Anaisata replied, counseling him, "A lack of religious preparation, my brother. She will sleep, however, and as soon as she has been able to rest a little, we will deliver her into your care. For now, it's better to keep some distance." And accompanying the physician, who had helped the young woman spiritually during her final days, Anaisata approached the newly discarnate, speaking in a fatherly manner, "Cremilda, let's get you some new treatment." Hearing him, the girl opened her terrified eyes and exclaimed, "Oh, doctor, thank God. What a terrible nightmare. I felt as if I were in the kingdom of the dead, listening to my long-deceased fiancé calling me to eternity. There is no death, my daughter," refuted Anaisato lovingly. "Believe in life eternal, profound, victorious life." "Are you a new doctor?" she asked, comforted. "Yes, I have been called to give you some magnetic-based treatments. It is essential that you sleep and rest." "That's for sure," she replied. "I'm very tired, and I need to rest." In a low voice, our instructor asked us to help in an inner attitude of prayer, and after remaining silent for a few seconds, he administered energizing passes to her. The young woman fell asleep almost immediately. Anaisato pulled her away from her remains with the loving care of a father, and calling her grateful fiancé, gently passed her to him. "Now you can show her the way, my brother." The young man thanked him with tears of joy, and I saw him volitate with his face glowing, carrying with him the sweet burden of his love. Our mentor made an expressive gesture and said, "Because of the natural goodness of her heart and deliberate cultivation of virtue, she will need no purgatorial trials. It's a pity, though, that her mind had no preparation through religious education. Soon she will be adapted to her new life. The good ones don't encounter insurmountable obstacles." And perhaps desiring to consolidate and synthesize the lesson, he concluded, "As you can see, the concept of death is useless to truly alleviate, heal or edify. What is needed is to spread the idea of life victorious. Moreover, the gospel has already taught us for centuries that God is not the God of the dead but the Father of creatures who live forever. The divine machine." In just a few minutes we were at the side of a dying man. His condition truly concerned the spirit clinician. He was a gentleman around 60 years old and was slowly wasting away with leukemia. "He lapsed into a coma several days ago," explained the physician, "but we need stronger magnetic aid to facilitate his disengagement. Besides two discarnate women, the dying man's mother and a close relative, his incarnate members of the family were deeply distraught." Anaisato examined the sick man carefully and stated, "There's nothing left but to help his spirit disengage itself." He then suggested that we observe the dying man closely. Concentrating with all my ability, I focused on this man who was about to discarnate. I noticed in detail that his soul was slowly withdrawing through various points of his body. I was astonished at seeing that right in the center of his skull there was a point of dying light, resembling a candle fluttering softly in the wind. It filled the entire encephalic region, awakening in me a deep sense of awe. That light, said Anicito, is the mind. We have no human concept to explain its exact purpose at present. Noticing my amazement, Anicito put his right hand on my forehead, giving me a vigorous magnetic influx, and said, Behold the humanized divine machine, the sacred tabernacle that the Lord enables to form on earth as the sublime temporary habitation of the spirit. Andre, you are not looking at an anatomical demonstration of earthly science, examining dead flesh and rigid muscles. Observe. The mortal eye would not be able to see what you are looking at right now. The microscope is also limited, despite the fact that it is a noble victory for limited human eyesight. The magnetic help of our dear mentor had changed the scene and I was compelled to concentrate all my energies so that my aura would not interfere with my observation. Though dim, the mental light had become sharper and the body of the dying man seemed to assume gigantic proportions, thereby offering a surprising spectacle to my eager eyes. His body looked like a wonderful factory in its innermost details. That scientific picture was simply astounding. I identified, in oversized proportions, the 9 organ systems of the human machine, the skeleton, the musculature, the blood circulation system, the blood purification apparatus subsumed in the lungs and kidneys, the lymphatic system, the digestive mechanism, the nervous system, the hormonal glands and the sense organs. Such a histological display was different from anything I could have dreamed of in my work in medicine. The circulating blood looked like it was moving along life-giving canals of that little world of bones, flesh, water and residue. Millions of microscopic organisms were coming and going in the current that was depleted of red corpuscles. I witnessed the flowing of strange forms, tiny containers loaded with deadly bacteria. Larger particles of microbial flora were being transformed into tiny boats accommodating minuscule beasts of prey by the hundreds. They were invading all the body's cellular nuclei. The organs, such as the lungs, liver and kidneys, were being irreparably assaulted by an incalculable number of infinitesimal saboteurs. And as the invading microbes were consolidating in certain cellular areas, something slowly began to stand out in the region under attack. A new form was being expelled from the worn-out and aging one. I realized that discarnation was occurring via a gradual process. It was a valuable lesson. I noticed that some of the glands were making a desperate effort to send certain amounts of hormones to the invaded areas, but they were immediately absorbed by the deadly particles. The blood plasma appeared to be a strange gangrenous liquid. I saw from the excessive movement of the mental wave that the dying man was trying to regain control of his bodily processes, but to no avail. All the cellular complexes were struggling against one another and the bacteria seemed to be enjoying their right to increasing and festive multiplication. Do you see the divine machine, formed by a pre-existing spirit mold? Asked Anicito, understanding my profound wonder. The body of an incarnate human being is a tabernacle and a blessing. From this heart-rending extinction of a life, you can see that all the movements of the body are subordinate to the managerial processes of the mind. The living body, Andre, represents a laborious conquest of earthly humanity on the Eternal Father's roster of bestowals. You can now identify the movements of living matter. Each organ is an autonomous department in the cellular realm, but subordinate to the individual's thoughts. 301. Each gland is a center of active service. There is a great similarity between the human body and the modern machine. They both run on fuel, but with the difference that in humans, chemical combustion obeys the spiritual sense that directs organic life. The mind governs this wonderful factory. Our mind doesn't possess merely our character, reason, memory, direction, balance and understanding. It also controls all the phenomena of corporeal expression. In the mental seat, and consequently in the brain, are all the distribution records of the vital principles for the cellular nuclei, including water and sugar. The metabolic centers are large workshops of incessant activity. The human mind, although indefinable by limited scientific earthly concepts, is the center of all manifestations of life on the planet. Each organ, each gland, my friend, plays a part in the work of the sublime machine that has been constructed in the subtle mold of the pre-existing spirit body, and precisely for this reason, the day will come when science will recognize every human abuse as actually being self-inflicted harm. The human factory is a repository of electrical energies of highly constructive or destructive potential. Each cell is a tiny engine running on mental impulse. Anisato paused for a few moments, and while I was looking awe-stricken at the strange microbial phenomena in the dying man's body, he resumed his instructive talk. Here is a brother at the moment of his disengagement. Notice his inability to control his conflicted cells. His bloodstream has been transformed into a channel for deadly invaders, which have not run into any defensive fortifications. You can observe and identify millions of units of tuberculosis, leprosy, diphtheria and cancer, which until now had been contained in the cellar of his physiological activity by an organized defense, but which have now multiplied alarmingly, along with other microbes as prolific as they are terrible. Nutrition has stopped. There is no possibility of new hormonal supplies. The dying man is withdrawing bit by bit, but because of a lack of mental education, he still has not totally abandoned his flesh. This can be noticed in the excessive intemperance of the cells, over which he does not even have partial control. It is obvious that he lived completely devoid of self-discipline. His physiological elements are too impulsive, obeying instinct much more than concentrated reason. To tell you the truth, our friend here is not discarnating, he is being expelled from the divine machine, where, from what we can see, it seems he did not fully appreciate the sublime gifts of God. Fernando's discarnation. When Anisato took his right hand off of my forehead, I was no longer able to continue my observations of the infinitesimal. My vision included details very important to the general interest, however, I was nowhere close to that power of understanding that my mentor friend had transmitted to me by the touch of his elevated magnetic power. I concentrated my visual energies and continued to analyze the bone structure, the blood, tissues and humors, but the microscopic battle had disappeared as if by magic. In any case, however, I was greatly surprised as I now realized my X-ray ability. After offering the same instructions to Vicente, Anisato got involved in something new. A group of grieving relatives was in the man's room, and an incarnate doctor was carefully examining him. At that moment, two spirits, who were in the room and who had just given us the usual greetings, approached Anisato and asked him to help the dying man more directly. "Please, noble friend," said the woman who had been the dying man's mother, "help us remove my poor son from his wasted body. We have been waiting many hours for someone who could help us out of our predicament. I have tried to comfort him but it's been noisy," she exclaimed mournfully. "He continues in a state of dolorous and terrible incomprehension. He is completely imprisoned by the sensations of physical suffering, just as he was tied to the satisfactions of the body during the course of his existence." Anisato agreed, adding, "In fact, you can notice great gaps in the dying man's mental expression. It's clear that he spent his human life obeying instinct more than reason. Obvious indications of how undisciplined he was can be observed in his cellular makeup. We might be able to help him disentangle himself from his strongest ties to the physical realm, however. That would indeed be a kind favor," replied the distressed mother. "Have you been given the responsibility of taking him?" asked our instructor, grasping the magnitude of the task. "We need to consider that because it will take only a few minutes for full disengagement to occur," she gestured sadly and replied, "I would love to sacrifice myself a bit further for my poor Fernando, but I only have permission to help him in his final moments. My superiors promised to help him, but advised me to leave him alone for a while. Fernando needs to reconsider his past and recognize the spiritual qualities he unfortunately disdained. Tears and remorse in the solitude of repentance will be the bearers of calm to his unreasoning spirit. My desire to nestle him close to my heart," Returning to times gone by is great. Nevertheless, I cannot jeopardize the evolution of divine learning. With my maternal tenderness,